It's the Mike Tech Show, show number 531. This show is a proud member of the Tech Podcast Network. If it's tech, it's here. Please visit techpodcast.com. Show is brought to you in part by Instant House Call. Remotely support your customers unattended and on demand through firewalls. Try it free by clicking on the link on my website at miketechshow.com. Use the promo code MikeTechShow. Hello, everybody. Welcome to the podcast. I'm your host, Mike Smith. Thank you very much for downloading and subscribing to the show. Please visit the main website at miketechshow.com. You can email me questions and suggestions for show topics at miketechshow@gmail.com. You can leave me a voicemail message. The phone number is 240-949-2450, and that's Mike Tech Show, all one word, on Skype. You can follow me on Twitter, twitter.com/MikeTechShow, Facebook, facebook.com/MikeTechShow, and also facebook.com/MikeNationNet. We also have the wiki at mtswiki.com. There you'll find links to all the past shows, the audio, the show notes. It's a great resource for the Mike Tech Show. And I actually want to thank Dan, who has stepped up and is helping edit and maintain the wiki. So thank you very much, Dan, for not doubling as a moderator and also the wiki editor. I really appreciate that. I have a lot to talk about, so I want to get started, and I apologize in advance. I'm coming down with something. My throat's sore. I'm coughing. I am not feeling good, and I'm losing my voice, and I want to get the show recorded before the voice is completely gone. I've been losing it today, and I could just tell. I could just hear I sound different, so that's why. This week, I was at a client for two things. One, they were migrating from their workstation to, it's an all-in-one older workstation with Windows 7 to a new souped-up laptop, a really, really fast Dell laptop with a docking station and two nice monitors. But that wasn't the real reason. The real reason, I mean, that was, yes, I had to migrate the data, but one of the other chores was to migrate all of the data that was being shared. His system was acting as the peer workstation for the office. And you really don't want to do that. You want to be able to separate those functions because that can really slow you down. If everybody hammering away at files from your system and then you're trying to work, try to separate that function. So they finally took my advice and bought a Synology NAS device, just 4 1-terabyte drives. They don't have that much space. It was like 80 gig of space for the data. So I quickly set that up, started transferring the data from their workstation, that peer workstation, and then pulled out Fabs Auto Backup 6 Pro. And I haven't talked about Fabs in a while because I wasn't a real big fan of version 5. Now, you know, 4 was just rock solid and loved 4. I didn't like the interface and the look and feel of 5, and I really never embraced it and adapted it to 5. But 6 is great. It's a clean, nice interface, works fabulously, and 6 Pro did a superior job in taking all of his information, his browser settings, his Outlook signature, the Outlook settings, found all the PST files, and I was able to cleanly migrate him from Outlook 2010 on that one system to now Outlook 2013. And when he purchased the Dell system, he also purchased Office. Now, if you are going to install Office 2013, make sure before you start that you ask your client or whoever you're installing it for, do you have a Microsoft account? Now, I asked my client, do you have a Microsoft account? And he said, no. So I said, we need to create one. So we go to Microsoft and we start creating an account. And what do you think the first thing it says when we put his email address in? There's already an account. So he didn't know it, but he had a Microsoft account. Now, what's the password? And he did have that saved in a file. So we got the password and he didn't realize he had the account. And we were able to log in. Once I knew we had the right email and password, then I began the install of Office 2013. It's easy to do when you get that card and you have to download, but it wants a Microsoft account. And remember that even if you're doing any new system with Windows, it's treat it just like the whole Apple and Mac systems where you have to have an Apple ID. Well, for now on, with Windows 8.1 and onward, the new versions of Office, you have to have a Microsoft account. It doesn't cost anything, so just create it. Makes life easier because they're going to force you to do it anyway, and you might as well have it up front. So Fabs Auto Backup did a great job, got everything ready. So why am I going back to this client tomorrow morning? Well, someone in the office that sort of acts like the IT support most of the time, and then when they get in over their head, that's when they call me. So they're a client, but they're not a retainer client. They're not, I would say, a regular, you know, I don't see them a lot. I always see them when there's problems, when they get in over their head, or if there's new technology to deploy, like the NAS device. Well, this employee installed Windows 8.1. The system came as Windows 7 Professional, so he must have checked that when he was ordering it online, the Dell system. But it came with the DVD. Problem is, there's no DVD in the laptop. So he would have had to bring in an external drive and did an in-place upgrade to 8.1. And I get a call today that they no longer can access Office. Office seems to have disappeared, and everything that I did for Outlook. I don't know what happened. I'm going to investigate that tomorrow morning, and I will figure out what went wrong. I mean, Office just doesn't get deleted, so it's got to all be there. So I'm going to fix that tomorrow. So I don't know what I'm walking into. I just know that everything I did got updated to 8.1, and let's see what happened. Client over the holidays, and this is a retainer client, so it really surprised me that they did not reach out to contact me, even via email. Their phone system was down for over a week. That is so unacceptable to have your phones down. We had been talking about going to a voice over IP system, but we never got to the details. Well, they went ahead and ordered the 8x8 VoIP system without talking to me. And they got phones that were only 100 meg switches built in the phone. Well, I want them to be a gig, so I would have counseled them to get different handsets, and I explained that you only have one network drop at each station. So if you're going to have two network drops, which 8x8 claims that was miscommunicated, and that's why they recommended the cheaper handset that only had a 100 meg switch built into the handset, because we're going to do a pass-through because they only have one network drop. Keep this in mind. If you're going to a VoIP system and you have a gig switch and you got gig computers, get a gig switch in the phone. And if you really can do it, go for a PoE switch, which is power over Ethernet, and now you don't even have to have a plug for the phone. And then you can use that as a pass-through as a switch. The reason I'm bringing that up, I'm actually implementing that with a provider called NetCarrier that is providing the solution for another client where they're moving offices. And right before the show, I got an email that Comcast has a problem with getting out there tomorrow morning, so they changed that to Saturday morning. So now I got to change all my schedule because I was going to do a walkthrough and test tomorrow. Now that gets pushed to Saturday. They were going to be doing a lot of moving on Friday. Now they're not going to move because I said, don't move anything until we know you're going to have internet at the new office. The phones aren't going to be installed until Monday. I'm going to get the internet connected, start getting the static IP set up for the printers and get them going. And then net carrier's coming in on Monday and they're putting their VoIP system in. All of the handsets have gig switches. They have a PoE switch that's going to go at the back for the central switch. So I expect that that's going to be a really nice network. And I'm working with the phone provider and sort of managing that process. So that's what I'm going to be doing this weekend. And then I have a new client that I will talk about next week. I'm going to be seeing on Tuesday. And this is interesting. It's the first financial planner that I've ever met that is a 100% Mac shop. They have all Macs. And I'm going in on Tuesday to work on their wireless problems. And they have some other issues. So it was very interesting because usually all the financial planners that I support, they all have to run Internet Explorer and they all are Windows. So it's interesting. And I can't wait to take a look at this and I'll report back. So I have a new Mac client. I have emails and voicemails, but I want to get to this one email. And it's very relevant since we were talking about Outlook. This is from Kate. I have a customer who is currently using Office 2010, including Outlook. I need to uninstall the 2010 and install Office 365, which is 2013. I know, on her computer and not screw up her Outlook. It's not an Exchange environment, and this is a PST file. Obviously, I know to back up the files before I do anything else. Can I just install Outlook 2013 and let it find the existing profile? And will it know all about her, at least 2, possibly 3 email accounts? Or do I have to migrate everything just as I would on a new computer? And if that's the case, how is FABS Auto Backup 6 at this? So this is happening next week. And I promised Kate that I would review that and talk about that. I have successfully installed Office 2013 directly on top of Office 2010 and had no issues with Outlook. But that doesn't mean you're not going to have any issues. So here's what I recommend. It just takes a couple extra steps. You might as well prepare for this. Back up the PSTs. You know to do that. For anybody, you make sure you go Start, Control Panel, Mail. You go in and you open up the profile. You go to Data Files and you look at all of the data files where they're located. You copy them and you copy them to an external drive. While you're there, it only takes a few seconds. Go to the email accounts. Check each one. Click Change. Use the Snippet tool from Windows 7 and make sure you're taking a picture of the settings. Now, you don't see the password because that's all asterisks, but you got all the settings. And there's 2 screens that you want when you're working in Outlook. And I'm going to bring it up on my system right now. You won't be able to see it, but I want to be able to clearly talk exactly what you want to be able to do. When you click Mail and you click Show Profiles, now I have 3 profiles, so I'm just going to go to my main one. You click Properties. You go to Data Files, and you highlight each one of those data files. You open the file location, and you copy that PST. Once you do that, go to click the Email tab, and then on each email account, highlight it, click Change. Take a screenshot of that. So now go to Start, type snippet, and then highlight and go over that whole box, take a picture, get a picture, and save that as a JPEG. Save that as email one. Now, click more settings, then advanced. You need a shot of the ports, the POP3, the SMTP, and what they have their settings for leaving the mail on the server or not. Run snippet and then make that email 1-2. So it's email account 1, screen 2. Now go back, click cancel, then click cancel again, highlight the next email account, click change, and do the same thing. Type snippet, grab that, call that email 2. Then go to more settings and call that email 2-2. So it's email account 2, screen 2. So you get the idea. You're going to have two screenshots for each email account. Now, the only thing missing is the passwords. And let me tell you, SIW saved me, because when I was doing the migration this week, although my client is very organized and had every password, he did not have the password for one of his email accounts. And I was able to run SIW, the latest version, click passwords, and it clearly gives you the password for Outlook. In a perfect world, if you're doing an Outlook migration or any kind of work with Outlook, you should have FABS Auto Backup 6 Pro and SIW. With those two utilities and doing the screenshots that I have just described, that's it. Now you're prepared for everything. Even after you go through all of this, and let's say you install Office 2013 and everything works perfectly, great. But what if it doesn't go so well? Now you're prepared. You have all the info you need. Even though FABS does a lot of this, I like to have this as a record for myself, because I will print those JPEGs and I will put them in a manual file for that client. Always good to have them. Always. And then I'll write their password on that sheet that SIW gives me. Now I got their email password. I got all their settings. I got their PST. You could reformat that computer and you could recover everything. So now if you run into a problem with the upgrade, you can always uninstall it and then reinstall 2013 from scratch. So I like to be prepared for everything. Prepare for the worst scenario and hope that you're going to get the best scenario. And the best scenario is that the upgrade's going to go flawlessly. Kate, I think it's going to go well. But I can't say that. We don't know everything about that client. You got three email accounts. They could have PSTs located all over the place. And 2013, a glitch could happen during the while you're installing it. So I don't take any chances. Plan like you're migrating them to a new computer. So do the due diligence, because it's worth those extra steps. So if the worst happens, you're ready. And that's the best advice I can give. And Kate just said that she set it up in the first place. I know. But still prepare for the worst, because you don't know what could happen during that upgrade process. They lose power when you do not have to uninstall 2010. Before installing 2013. So let's say you're in the middle of an upgrade and the power goes off in the middle of the upgrade and everything gets corrupt. That's why you never know what's going to happen, and always prepare for the worst. And now you will not have a problem. Going to switch gears and let's play this voicemail from Chris, who asks us a couple really good questions that I'm going to take a few minutes and answer.
Hi, Mike. Chris here, a longtime listener. A couple weeks ago, you were talking about network segmentation, and there's so many different ways to do that. You can hook up a router and use the WAN port, and then that'll separate a network, and you can use VLANs, and there's so many different ways to do it. And what do you think? I mean, do you do it on a case-by-case basis when you go out and you do a walkthrough? Like, what is the best method? And I realize you talked about before, you can't really summarize it because you have to have years of experience, but I'm really curious. I see there's Ubiquiti, and they've got like a massive solution where you can have an AP, and it'll also do a guest network, and you can do it with the normal router. And I was just curious, like, what's the best way to do that over a house and then a business and then a large corporation with like 100 employees? Like, how do you determine that? And I was also curious, you talked about removing a virus, and you had one system and you had to work on it for a long time and use a bunch of different software. And whenever I go out into the field, I try to mitigate my time and ask myself, what is faster? Is this system so heavily infected that I just want to wipe it? Or do I want to go ahead and try to recover their stuff? I know, depending on their data, and have to back everything up. What's your good rule of thumb to determine how long is too long to work on a system infected with virus? Thank you.
I'm going to answer, Chris, your second question first. My rule of thumb on cleaning versus a nuke and pave and wiping the system, I have a 2-hour rule. If it looks like it's going to go way beyond 2 hours, then I start examining how difficult will it be to just wipe the system. I have a lot of scenarios where that's not a good option. Wiping the system could be several hours because the client doesn't have all the software, or there's so much custom setups on the system that it could take hours to rebuild. So nuke and pave's not always an obvious option. Cleaning sometimes is a better option, and each scenario is different. But to generalize, I have a 2-hour rule. If it's going to take me more than 2 hours, then I start looking towards redoing the whole system. But I also look at what is my schedule and what am I doing. If I'm cleaning the system and it's with me at my house, there have been times where I've been cleaning 3 systems at the same time and working on something else. I have them all lined up, have them all running software to clean, and then maybe doing something else. Maybe it's watching TV even. Maybe it's just working on something online or getting caught up on email. If that's the case, I don't mind taking the time and letting it clean because I'm not spending every moment watching it. If I'm on site and it looks like it's going to be ugly, I try to always bring that system home so it's in my environment and I can then run everything and start cleaning it. So that's how I handle that. And it's a case by case. I usually opt for cleaning it. And if I'm on site, then, and I can't take that computer away, I'm going to make different decisions. But if I can bring it home, I'm just cleaning it. Now, on network segmentation, if it's just for a guest network, I always opt for a separate router. Or if I have a really good access point or router that comes with guest networks built in, I'll look to configuring that. But I really like to have a separate router for the guest network with a completely different IP scheme where we're connecting into the WAN port. And then I make it a totally different IP scheme. Give you an example of if the main network's 192.168.1.whatever, I might make that other network 192.168.200. So it's a completely separate network. If I'm able to run the line directly into the internet provider's router, then I'm going to get a totally separate IP scheme anyway. On Comcast, I'm going to get a 10 network, where the other network that I'm deploying could be 192. So that's segmentation for a guest network. There's other types of network segmentation for compliance. Now, for PCI compliance, I take a look at what is the budget, how big is the network, and how much do I have to segment. If I have HP ProCurve switches already in place that has VLAN capability, well, then I can go in and configure ports to be on a separate segment, and I can isolate that network and separate it and have the traffic that needs to communicate and deal with the credit card company completely separate from the rest of the network. Now, I like doing that with separate routers, and you can do that very inexpensively. Just like you did the guest network, you can literally separate a network for PCI compliance or whatever type of compliance that you're dealing with. So that's when I'll look at what equipment am I inheriting. If it's a very small company, most likely the switches aren't smart switches and they do not have VLAN capability. But if I'm in a big company and they have huge switches, boy, that makes it easy. If they got the VLAN capability, then we will set up VLANs, and that's a virtual local area network, and we will separate it. That's how we can prioritize certain traffic over other traffic. That's how we can prioritize VoIP traffic, maybe having it travel on its own VLAN through a network. The bigger the network, the more complicated it is, the more VLANs will come into play. So you can segment your traffic, prioritize your traffic, put a quality of service level on certain traffic, because I want to make the voice traffic a priority over all other traffic. That's when it can get really complicated and you're going to have to spend money on the switches. So I look at everything. The size of the company, how many segments are we looking at, how big, how many people have to connect, what's the budget, and what equipment am I inheriting? Can they buy different switches that I can put in there? Each scenario is completely different, but I will tell you what the majority is. We end up with inexpensive routers separating the least amount of computers that we have to in order to just be compliant. That's what ends up happening because they don't have the budget to do any more. So I'm guided by budget, where make me PCI compliant and I can only spend $200. You know, that makes it tough. You don't have a whole lot of choices. Whereas if I'm at another client and we got to segment traffic or do something and they have the money, that makes it easier. And I can put in, you know, HP ProCurves and then set up the VLANs. So, Chris, thank you for your questions, and I hope that I answered them. Let's get to some more email. This is from Curtis. You mentioned in your last episode that you used a plugin to get the multiple desktops with Windows 7. What is it? What did you use? I would love to have this in Windows, and it's been a feature in Linux for years. Yes, the program I'm talking about is Dexpot, and Dexpot, and I will have a link to the website. Next email from Johnson, and he says, I have a Mackie Pro FX12 12-channel USB compact mixer with effects, and I wanted to use this mixer for my podcast. Is this possible? You don't even need a mixer for a podcast. You can use any mixer that you want. All you need is a microphone, and you can have that plugged directly into your computer, and you just need software to record your podcast. So any mixer will work, as so long as it connects to a device or your system that you're going to have something recording the audio. So any mixer, especially if it's USB and it's recognized by your computer, no problem. And we actually had a couple emails back and forth as he had some questions. Glad to help. This is from Paul. I have been listening to your show for some time now. Thanks for all the great topics. I also wanted to wish you a belated but happy new year. Keep up the great work. My question to you is, what are your recommendations for a good firewall? I run server 2012 R2 as a domain controller. I also run two virtual machines. One is a Plex server running Windows 7, and my other virtual machine is server 2012 R2 VPN. I have a few desktops and laptops on my network, among other wireless devices. As securely protecting our networks is an important investment, I would love to hear your recommendations. I have been running a Zywall UGG 50 on my network, but would like to try something else. And this is for a home network. You know what? Since it's for a home network, you're going to love my recommendation. Get an old piece of hardware, put two Intel NICs in it, and download Untangle. I think that's an excellent firewall. I have Untangle running on, let's see, 1, 2, 3, 4 different clients for their firewall, for their small businesses. Untangle is a great solution. I'll have a link to the website. I think you should really look into that. I also have some Sonic walls for the for firewalls. I've inherited a few Sonic walls, and I've heard some good things about the Sonic walls now that Dell has taken over. So that's something I haven't had a chance to put my hands on firsthand. Try Untangle. I think you're going to really like that. This is from Jason. I was wondering if you or your listeners know of a good white label VoIP reseller. I am wanting to do a white label for VoIP service. I have been reselling another brand and not as a white label. However, due to recent issues, I would like to go to selling as a white label. I would like to hear from everybody, weigh in on that, and let me know what could we recommend for Jason for this, because this is an area that I don't have any experience. When it comes to VoIP, I know RingCentral, I'm going to be learning NetCarrier soon this weekend, and 8x8. They're sort of my go-to VoIP systems. What else is out there, and what would you recommend here for Jason? That is it for tonight's show. I made it through with only one break. If you purchase anything from Amazon or know anybody purchasing from Amazon, please use my link, amazon.micnation.net. Your price is the same, but a small commission comes back to help support the show. I really appreciate that. And I want to thank everybody for your continued support and downloading and staying subscribed to the show. Next week, the show might be Wednesday night, and it's because of a concert I'm going to. My son Ryan won Linkin Park tickets to a concert in Atlantic City, and we're going to go down. We're going to spend the night, Friday night, down there, and looking forward to seeing Linkin Park and I think Rise Against and another group. So I'm not going to have time to edit the show Friday night or Saturday, so I'm thinking of moving the show up to Wednesday night, and then I can edit the show Thursday night and get it out. Stay tuned to Facebook and Twitter, and I will keep you posted and notify you when the time of the next show. Thank you so much. I really appreciate all your support, and I'll talk to you next week. Bye-bye, everybody.
You've been listening to The Mike Tech Show, a proud member of the Tech Podcast Network. Please visit techpodcast.com.